Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. It is Wednesday night, May the 29th, 2013. It's 8 o'clock p.m., so that means it is time for the Coach Ricky Clark, Coach Joe Ledford, Let's Talk Sports Show on WDCU, Daniel Clark, Let's Talk Radio. We're coming to you from Blog Talk Radio. An exciting day in sports, a controversial day. I'm going to be joined in a few minutes by head coach Ricky Clark, who had his athletic banquet at James Martin Middle School today. And coach, I believe you're on the line with me tonight. Is that you, Ricky?
That's me.
Well, I know you had a busy night last night. Had to do the show by myself. I actually missed you a whole lot. You think, oh, I can do this by myself, and it's a lot harder than people think it is. It's a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. But I did have an opportunity to talk to head coach Mike Newsom of the Wonders Vale Brown, Kannapolis Senior High School. You know, Mike was over at Butler, won a couple of state championships over there, and, you know, he's having to do a little rebuilding over at A.L. Brown, coach, and he had a lot of good things to say to high school athletes and to the kids who are going to be going to play for Kannapolis. And next Tuesday night, we're going to have Barry Shuford, longtime head coach in this area. Barry was the head coach at Geringer High School, then the offensive coordinator at Independence. Then he went over to Butler, then to Parkwood, and now he's back at Olympic, one of the truly great personalities in high school coaching. He's going to be with us talking to all athletes, but more particularly the kids who are going to be attending Olympic. And it was a big day at middle school athletics at James Martin Middle School today, was it not, coach?
It was our grand finale. We're officially done. Got a little cleaning up we need to do tomorrow, but we're officially done. And you know, unlike a lot of other schools that have a spring and a fall athletic banquet, we have just one, and we invite the upcoming seventh and sixth graders to attend. So we had a full house today, and you know, I want to thank you for coming over and getting on that grill, and you know, Miss Corbett and Miss Morrow for working back then, Miss Smith. I got everybody fed, and the kids enjoyed the food and the trophies and the whole nine. And you know, we did it in a half a day. So my hat's off to the cooks and everybody that helped organize it.
Coach, I got to be totally honest with you. After 42 years of doing this, sitting through an athletic awards program is not my idea of a good time. I'm sorry to say that. I know it means a lot to the kids, but I've been through it so many times, and I was happy to be outside on that grill. I think we fed about 200 kids. I think I personally cooked about 130 hot dogs and about 60 hamburgers. So it was a good day. And you're right, we had some really good people out there, and the kids looked great. They were all dressed up. And, you know, you get a little emotional when you think about it this time of year every year because, you know, Ricky, we've really been blessed. It's been, you know, really been fortunate to be around a lot of quality young men and women. And, you know, here they are, about a week and a half away from not being eighth graders anymore, from being, you know, freshmen in high school. And, you know, coach, there are a lot of teams that I've enjoyed, a lot of teams that I haven't particularly enjoyed the personalities. But I got to tell you, we have had a real quality group of young men and women at James Martin Middle School this year. And whatever high school those kids are going to, those high schools are going to get some really, really good young people. And so, congratulations to you on a great season. You know, three championship trophies, three new banners going up in the gym. That's always a good year when you can put a championship banner up. And that's not why we do it. It's nice getting them. But, you know, we were competitive in just about every sport this year, and in the sport that we're historically not as competitive in, they went a long way in becoming a lot more competitive. And so I'd have to say it was a good solid A-minus for James Martin Middle School all the way around this year in athletics. Would you not?
I would. And you know, Joe, we were speaking earlier with girls basketball. You know, really turned that program around. And every now and then, you know, you run across a situation where it's not necessarily the talent pool. A lot of times it can be on a middle school level. You know, you walk into a staff meeting. We need a girls basketball coach, a soccer coach, a baseball coach. Who can do that? People just raise their hand. Okay, you the coach. And you know, sometimes we get caught up in that. But I try to at Martin, we try to make sure that that the coaches that we bring in have a passion for the game and understand that that you know there's a situation that you may very well be coaching a kid that could do this for a living, and we want to make sure that we have good coaching in there. And a lot of times, Joe, and you know this, a lot of times, you know, knowing the answer is not always as good as knowing how to find the answer. And you know, we've had coaches come and coaches go, and you know, and I don't expect the next 3 or 4 years to be any different. But I think we hit the nail on the head. We made a couple of changes with our basketball program. You know, we just moved some people around with that, and the girls finished 8-6. In opposed to last year, where I don't think we won but like 4 games. So the girls finished 8-6, and the boys actually won the conference. So that was a little tweak, and we didn't go out to the internet to find coaches. They were right on our roof. We just gave them an opportunity to coach. And you were speaking earlier about, you know, just the quality of athletes and their character that we have. And, you know, not all of them come to us that way. You know, they grow up right in front of us. You know, you were talking to a kid, I think, one day last week or the week before, and, you know, we were just talking about the struggles that you and that kid had his 7th grade year. And, you know, he come back as an 8th grader, and over a summer they just grow up. And those that don't grow up and don't get it, you know, we send them packing. So it's not, you know, they didn't. Some of them didn't come to us being the way they are. We had a big part into how they carry themselves now, and you know, I want to thank you for your hard work over there with me in that aspect.
Oh, it's not hard work at all. I tell you something, Ricky. I often tell people that I practice law so that I can coach football and be your assistant athletic director. But as we talk about coaches, I don't know if you saw that, you know. Andrea Stinson, who had coached basketball at James Martin, was just hired to be the new girls basketball coach at Newton Conover. You know, and that's one of the traditional sports schools in North Carolina. You know, Andrea, who you know, coached for us at Martin, replaced Ike Williams, who left to become the women's coach at Catawba Valley Community College. And, of course, Andrea was named the North Carolina High School Athletic Association's Female Athlete of the Year in 1986-87 up at North Mecklenburg. She was a 2-time Parade High School All-American. She scored more than 2,000 points while playing for the Great KU up at North Carolina State, and was an ACC Player of the Year in 1990, and still holds their state record, North Carolina State record for women's scoring average at 22.7. I didn't know this about her. She played professionally in France, Italy, and Turkey between 1992 and 2002. Then she joined the Charlotte Sting, that WNBA franchise, in 1997. And she played with the Sting until 2004. And she ended up her career with the Detroit Shock in 2005. And we recognized her earlier this month when she was elected to the North Carolina State Hall of Fame. And it does mention in here that she coached at Central Cabarrus from 2007 to 2009. And James Martin, middle school... She coached middle school ball at James Martin from 2005 to 2007. So, you know, congratulations to Andrea. I mean, a tough competitor. I mean, I remember she would play in some of those student-faculty games, and you'd think that she was back on that WNBA court. Just a great lady, a good role model for young women. And Coach, she's one of the toughest women I've ever met in my life. She, as the kids like to say, Coach Stent don't play, and she doesn't play, and I'm sure that they're going to love her up at Newton Conover, and I think she's going to like that small-town environment.
A lot of personality that girl has. A lot of personality.
Well, speaking of personality, I got to say this. I like to think I know a little bit about some things, and every now and then it comes up where I just have to stand up and say I was dead wrong about something. Indiana is giving the Heat everything that they want. And in all frankness, the Heat's lucky not to be down 3-1 at this point. And that series is tied. Of course, San Antonio just blew through the Memphis Grizzlies, and we'll see how that goes. But, you know, I'm not sure the layoff's going to help them in the end. I know we often talk about them being an older team, and that layoff sometimes – can give an older guy a chance to recover, but it can also make him a little bit lazy too. You know what I'm saying? But I'm reading a lot today about the call, the sixth foul call on LeBron James. And so I've done a little research on this point, Coach. Did you know, how many times would you think that LeBron James has fouled out in a 10-year career? Over 800 games, how many times would you think that he's fouled out?
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say 24.
How about five?
Five times
in 10 years. And, you know, and Ricky, we were talking about this a little bit before, you know, we came on the air tonight. And as I read through, you know, some of the comments about it, let me say this. I don't believe that officials decide games, okay? I just don't. I think that players decide games. It's a 48-minute game. It's a 9-inning baseball game. It's a 60-minute football game. And after – I hear so much after a game, people talking about the referees, the officials. You know, something, Ricky, I got to tell you, I've had my share of bad calls go against me as a coach. I've had my share of bad calls go with me, okay? But I am just really, really kind of tired of hearing everybody. You talk about a game, talk about the players, talk about the game. How about, I'll never forget something that Mark Minnett said to Jim Secord when we beat them in a football game one night. We were playing, Independence was playing Providence over at Providence, and Secord was grousing because we beat them in like three overtimes. And Mark Minnett, who had coached with Secord, walked across the field and Jim was snarling. And Minnett said, hey, Jim, take your butt whooping like a man and enjoy it. You know what I mean? So, there's something that he said for that, Ricky. Well, Jim wasn't enjoying it at that moment, and he didn't say butt whooping either. He used that three-letter word to describe the human rear end, which we don't say on this show because of we do have young people listening. But, you know, Coach, I really hear, and I hear it from parents out of the school. You know, I hear it out at these tournaments. It's about the officials. It's about the officials. It's about the officials. You know, something, I don't buy into that, but I think that is what is wrong with sports, and I think that's what's wrong with America. We're always looking for some reason, some excuse why we didn't get it done. And the truth of the matter is LeBron James is not the only guy playing for the Miami Heat. They got a bunch of other guys on that roster, and all of them are good. All of them are very good, or they wouldn't be NBA players. And today, instead of talking about what a great job that Indiana is doing against the Heat, we're talking about whether LeBron James agreed with a sixth foul call. I've seen it. I've watched it about 10 times since you and I talked about it. And, Coach, it's the kind of call that could go either way. It went the way it went. So you know what I got to say to all the people whining about that? Get over it. That did not decide that ball game. Those missed layups, those turnovers, those missed free throws, that's where that game was lost. And in all frankness, I'm reading articles that are saying that LeBron is not getting the star treatment. What in the world is that about? What in the world is that about?
You know what that's about.
Well, tell me about it. Explain it to me. Explain why Michael Jordan should get a third step. Explain to me why LeBron James should foul out five times in an 820-game career to this point. Explain to me how that is fair. That is professional sports, Coach, and everybody gets paid on the basis of their performance. So explain to me why the officials should give the superstars the benefit of the doubt. Tell me why that makes any sense. But everybody seems to expect it.
Well, people don't fill up the arena to watch the superstar sit on the bench. They just don't.
Then it's a rigged event, Coach. It's not a legitimate sporting event if we are allowing the fact that we have a superstar in the arena tonight to dictate how the game plays out, to dictate how an official calls the game. You know, Ricky, in baseball, I used to tell my players, my pitchers and my hitters, if he's calling a hard corner off the plate ball a strike, then it's a strike. Swing at it and throw to it. The strike zone is where the umpire says it is. The only thing that I want out of an umpire, though, is I want the same strike zone for both teams, and I want the same strike zone in the first inning that I get in the seventh inning. I want it to be a consistent strike zone all day long. But, you know, it used to drive me nuts when people would say, well, you know, Michael's going to get that call. Michael's going to get that call. Why should Michael get that call in a sporting event that is regulated by federal law, okay? You know, I mean, if it's a fixed game, that's a violation of federal law. You know that? You know, I mean, when officials fix games in the NBA, coach, they get prosecuted in federal court, okay? So tell me how it's okay to say that the superstar should get the call because the fans want them to get the call. I'm not buying it. And if you think I'm wrong, I'll shut up and you tell me why I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong, but it is what it is. If you know, if I unload $300-$400 for those courtside seats or booths or whatever, and Michael Jordan is sitting on the bench the last 5 minutes of the game, or LeBron's is sitting on the bench, or whoever, Kevin Durant is sitting on the bench, or Carmelo is sitting on the bench, you know, they start off calling touch fouls, and they let the game progress, and the fouls, they go away from calling touch fouls to calling a little bit more physical fouls. It's hard to go back to that with 2 minutes left on the clock, and it's a 3-point ball game. It's hard for you to go back and make anybody understand how you call a touch foul when you haven't called those touch fouls for two quarters. You start calling them at the beginning of the game to get your respect so the players will know this is how we're going to officiate the game. Now you got your respect. The game is being officiated. You're letting them play a little bit. And, you know, there are some hard fouls in the second and third quarter. There really was. And then here we have 2 minutes left, and you call them a touch foul, and you calling traveling. You can call traveling almost every time any NBA player touches the basketball. You can blow that whistle for traveling. But you certainly can't blow that whistle for traveling with 2 minutes left in the game, and there's a 3-point difference, and it's the playoffs.
Whoa, slow down.
I blew it the whole game.
Hold on, coach. Saying. That's like the guys who say they can't call pass interference in the end zone on a Hail Mary. Why?
Of course they can.
If it's pass interference, it's pass interference. Now, and to me, and you know, Ricky, you know, I'm an old-fashioned kind of guy, and I'm a sports purist. And if anybody out there is listening wants to disagree with me, especially if you go to NBA games, which I don't, I've no use for spectator sports. I'm not the best spectator you'll ever see. I like to be close to the action. But our Player Sporting Goods guest call-in line is 888-689-4061. And if you've gone to the NBA games, if you love the NBA, and you go specifically to see the superstars play, and you think that Coach Joe Leffer is just full of mud, feel free to pick up the phone and call me and tell me tonight. But, Ricky, I'm not going to back off my belief that in order for sports to be legitimately fair, an even playing field, Michael Jordan shouldn't get that extra step. LeBron James shouldn't just get called for, you know, six fouls five times in an 820-game career because fans want to see him play. He's got the same type of contract that every other player in the league has, and that is an incentive-based contract, okay? That's like saying Mariano Rivera, who, by the way, blew a one-run lead to the Mets last night, you know, the greatest reliever in the history of relievers, didn't get an out, gave up two runs. And, you know, Ricky, if there's a better closer in the history of baseball than Mariano Rivera, I don't know who it is. He's just had a phenomenal career. But for him to go do that against the Mets, I bet you he has not felt too good about himself today. But in any event, he shouldn't have a different strike zone than the other guy. This notion that the stars get the call, I'm sorry, this old coach is bothered by that. There are times, Ricky, when we don't get the calls at James Martin Middle School for reasons that you and I aren't going to talk about on the air. Usually it has something to do with people not wanting us to run up the score. Well, we're not going to run up the score. We're going to run our offense, but we're not going to run up the score. I don't want the officials helping the other team out. I'm sorry. If we commit a penalty, I want it called, as long as it's a fair call, you know. But I don't want a double standard. I will not tolerate a double standard in a courtroom, Coach. I just won't. And have about been, you know, had a thumping put on me by a judge once or twice, or maybe a few more times than that in my career. But I expect in the courtroom for my clients to have as level a playing field as they can get. And usually I really get wired up in the courtroom when somebody's just blatantly lying and thinking that we're so stupid that we're buying it. That's when I get a little nasty, or when I get a judge who is becoming part of the prosecution. Now, the judge is the referee, and the referee calls a foul, but he doesn't shoot the free throw, you know? And to me, I want America to shut up about officials. My brother-in-law, Dan, God save him, it's always some call that keeps Michigan from winning. My brother, Tom, there's always some call that lets Duke win. Duke gets all the calls. How about, can we not talk about what a great job Indiana has done in this series? And they may win this series, Coach. They may win it. And I'm the guy that said that the Heat would lose maybe one game the entire playoff run, and here they've lost four. I still think they're going to beat Indiana. I still think they're going to win the championship. But if they win it, I want it to be because they win it, because they go out and they outplay the other team, and they're just better than whoever it is they're playing, not because the league's best player, maybe the greatest player ever, gets an extra step or doesn't get foul calls that everybody else gets. Because if the officials are pushing it along in that direction, then as far as I'm concerned, that just ain't right. And we do have a caller. Caller, welcome to the Coach Ricky Clark, Coach Joe Ledford Show. Who am I talking to?
This is Brad. How you
Brad,
doing, Joe?
I'm doing great. Brad, you're on the line with Coach Ricky Clark.
I decided to listen to the show tonight, mainly because I wanted to hear you, Joe. But I just to give you a perspective, I really like what y'all are talking about. It's very interesting to me, especially because I'm a fan of sports in general, but I do not watch or follow or feel any kind of allegiance to a particular team. But I can tell you that I have an immense love for Michael Jordan. And when I reflect upon why I feel this way, is that to me, sports is a show that's on TV. It's not something that I live and breathe and feel really passionate about. It's something that entertains me. And when I walk away from the game, I don't really remember anything other than the highlights. And, like, when I think back at the highlight reel of my life and try to equate that to, like, what I watched growing up, like, I think about Michael Jordan, you know, and I have a lot of memories and stuff tied to that. And if you think about, you know, it's a perspective that you guys probably don't usually get on a sports show as a non-sports guy calling in, but, you know, when you think about big companies like Nike and all of the – and Sprite and the people that get behind these big athletes and stuff, they want to market to people like me, too. You know, they're marketing to a much bigger crowd than the people that fill the seats at the stadium. You know, and you're talking about in every show there's a protagonist and an antagonist and there's a hero and there's the guy that wears the cape. And, you know, that's who the little kid identifies with is this is the good guy. This is the guy that's going to win the game. This is the guy that's going to make the shots. This is the guy that I back and everyone else is just kind of backing him up. That's what the NBA is. And, you know, I think I got a unique perspective on that because, you know, I think I'm the only guy that's had floor seats to NBA games that really doesn't follow the NBA.
You know,
that's for sure.
But you know, Coach, with Brad on the line for us, I got to tell you, Brad, I was down in Myrtle Beach this past weekend, and I saw a lot of really fast motorcycles. And you say you're not a sportsman, but a lot of folks don't know this about Brad, but Brad raced motorcycles, and I know, Ricky, you might want to pay real close attention to this because a couple of years ago, Brad, Ricky said he was thinking about buying a motorcycle. Well, his sister immediately accused me of putting him up to that. Joe must have gotten a motorcycle. I have never been on a motorcycle, and I know Ricky wants one. But, Brad, you've actually raced those motorcycles, haven't you?
Well, I've raced 1,000cc sport bikes, club raced, wheel raced, pretty much about as – it's kind of like the – the Sprint Cup compared to, or the Sprint cars compared to NASCARs, if you will. Kind of the farm league, the farm team, if you will. And did that for a couple of years, did pretty well with it, got some championships. But
Tell Ricky why he shouldn't get on a motorcycle.
Why he shouldn't get on a motorcycle. Well, unless you're about 7 or 8 years old, you're probably too late to learn, to be honest with you. There's a learning curve that's when you can learn as a child in the dirt at low speeds with low risk, you know, it gives you the chance to make the mistakes that you have to make to figure out how these things work, because nothing works the way that it's supposed to. You turn right to go left, turn left to go right. You know, there's nothing natural about riding, especially a sport bike. But, you know, through the years of, you know, falling off in the dirt and knocking the wind out of yourself when you were a kid, you know, the entry learning curve for an adult is much steeper. You know, you don't recover like you do when you're a kid. And, you know, you're automatically starting out on a playing field that's far beyond a child would ever have to step into. And then, you know, there's not really that arena for you to learn in. You know, I'm not saying it's impossible. People go out and, you know, get Harleys when they're 50 years old. But I can't tell you how many guys I've seen, you know, drop motorcycles at gas stations and lay them down and, you know, hit the greasy pizza box in the road, if you will.
You know, they're incredibly dangerous, but they're also exciting as heck. You know, it was, we were in the Atlantic Beach, North Myrtle Beach area this weekend. It was Black Bike Week, and I tell you something, there were just some beautiful motorcycles there. I mean, and at night, they had them decked out with lights. They had lights on their helmets and on their jackets. And it, a lot of times, it really, you know, looked like something out of a Tron movie or something like that. And the thing that just made me so uncomfortable, though, was, you know, they're not wearing helmets. They're weaving in and out of traffic. And I was more tense, not that I was going to have an accident, but that somebody was going to, you know, lay one of those bikes down right in front of me, because what would happen is one person would merge in, and I always kept about a 30 or 40-foot distance between me and the car in front of me because I knew the bikes were going to want to cut in. But it wasn't just one would cut in. The whole crowd would cut in, and they'd bang into each other every now and then. You just kept waiting for people to, you know.
It's kind of it's like fish schooling. It's kind of, as strange as it looks to you from the outside, as if you're actually riding within the school, just taking those little cues from all the people around you and knowing that everyone's going to do that. Because, I mean, you got to admit, as chaotic as it looks, there's a grace to the whole thing. And you know, one other thing I wanted to say about the when you're talking about the sport bikes down there is what a lot of people don't realize they're looking at, especially the long, stretched-out bikes. These guys have tens of thousands of dollars, and some of these bikes are 400 and 500 horsepower, you know. A bike that might be 120 to 150 horsepower as produced by the factory, some of those things you're looking at have nitrous oxide, turbo systems. I mean, I've seen dyno charts with, you know, upper 400 horsepower out of a motorcycle.
Wow.
Yeah. Ricky, you want to get yourself a motorcycle?
Eventually.
A great company out there, they're called Nesbud. It's the Northeast Sport Bike Association. They're sponsored by Yamaha, and they go to the different road race tracks all around the Southeast, all up into the Northwest. They bring a fleet of Yamaha motorcycles out to Virginia International Raceway and Road Atlanta and Barber Motorsports Park and pretty much say, hey, come down, get on a brand new Yamaha. We'll have an instructor that you can follow them around the course. You know, they'll put you in leathers and everything, and I mean, really give you the experience of what it's like to be on a sport bike and hold your hand the whole way through. They don't charge anything for it either.
Well, Coach, you ought to do that.
We're gonna have to get that information from you. But I'm a Harley man. I was looking at that V-Rod muscle, muscle sports bike that Harley's selling now, and man, that's a beautiful piece of equipment. It really is.
They're good bikes. I'd say if I was going to own a Harley, I actually ride a Victory right now. I believe that the sport bikes kind of belong on the racetrack and the street bikes belong on the street. I'm kind of with Joe on that. He was telling me earlier that he couldn't believe that there was no seat on the back of these sport bikes for the girls to be on. And he said, you know, Harley's got the big armrests and the backrests and everything. I'm more that speed on the road. I like to do a lot of touring and stuff. But that V-Rod's a beautiful bike. It's, you know, that engine's actually a more modern designed engine than the, you know, Harley-Davidson traditional motors are.
Right, it's not much to do to it. You know, if you go in and you purchase one, naturally you can make some modifications. But, you know, I learned to ride when I was about 16. You know, took off with my cousin's bike and kept it a couple of hours, went on and took that butt whipping when I got back home. But when I got back home, I knew how to ride. But back then, you know, a 750 Honda was about as big as it got out on the East Coast. I'm just blown away that, you know, everybody kind of see Harley Davidson as a big touring bike, but I think with that V Rod, they hit the nail right on the head. It is a beautiful bike.
Yeah, it's more of a drag racing style bike. I think they call that a pro street. I don't know a lot about the whole cruisers yet. I've only had one for a short time. You know, as a sport bike guy, you know, you're not supposed to wave at the cruiser guys, and the cruiser guys aren't supposed to wave at the sport bike guys. So I've kind of been ignorant to them until I, you know, got old enough to join the ranks, I guess you say. Yeah, but as far as a V-Rod goes, you know, not much to do to it. You can get, you know, 300-400 horsepower out of those, too, if that's what you wanted to do with it. I think that was based on their drag design.
Well, Brad, what got you into the racing? Because I remember for a while you were, you know, going about every other weekend somewhere, and you actually, you know, you finished first in your division a couple of different times, and you know, I mean, what, you know, they're very seldom do we actually get a chance to talk to somebody that's raced on this show, because we tend to be more of a football, basketball, baseball type show. But, you know, I mean, you know, tell us a little bit about the races that you were in, what the courses were like, where they were, and really how you did, because you were quite successful, as I recall.
Well, I was really good at not crashing. I got all my crashing out of my system just going out and doing track days. And that's how I got involved with NESBA. Great, great organization. But, I mean, basically, you know, I, as a teenager with a powerful sport bike, I was acting like a hooligan on the streets and getting in trouble. matter of fact, I think one of the first time I met Joe was when, after I got a ticket for riding a wheelie that actually put me behind bars for a little while.
It is. That's a true story. That's a true story, folks.
But, well, I mean, so, you know, the whole NESBA thing is they like to outreach to guys who like to ride fast on the street, and that was me, and they put me on the racetrack, which taught me a lot of humility, because I, you know, other than flying a helicopter, I can't imagine anything that could be possibly as complicated as racing a motorcycle. And, you know, I fell in love with, you know, the finding confidence in places that were terrifying, if you will. And, you know, and after doing enough track days and realizing that I was faster than the rest of the guys, I wanted to see how I stacked up. And, you know, I went out and did a year as a novice racer, didn't do real well, but did well enough to progress to an expert status. And when I went expert, I decided I was going to do all the races and I wasn't going to crash. And it kept me in the points enough that, you know, the local tracks, like we got a great track right outside of Charlotte. It's in Kershaw, South Carolina. It's called Carolina Motorsports Park. Well, that was my ace in the hole, because it's a little track out in the country and it's really rough. But if you know the track well, it's a very fast track. And all these fast guys would come down from Pennsylvania and, you know, up north, and these guys would just get their butt handed to them there at CMP, and, you know, I could do really well there just because I had done so much time on that track. And, you know, just between not sticking my head in the dirt and getting points in every race, you know, I could make up for those fifth and sixth place finishes by sneaking in a win at the little tracks like Jennings, Florida, or Talladega, or, you know, I always did pretty well at Road Atlanta, but, you know, you get some high class, high dollar guys that come down to Road Atlanta just to practice for the AMA. Because our, you know, as a club, as a racing club, they honor any professional racer can just come and race at welcome there, you know. So it's neat. I've been on the track with some really, you know, and those guys are usually really classy guys, and, you know, they'll be out there, they'll be two laps ahead of everyone else, and they'll pull off without finishing the race, and let who would have been first be first, you know.
Well, no, Brad, we have a circuit. Was there a lot of camaraderie amongst the drivers? And I mean, like, there seems to be a lot of that in.
Yeah, anything, anytime men risk their lives together, you got camaraderie. You know, you get some
question for you. Now, everybody's talking about a section up in the North Carolina Mountains, Tennessee border right there called the Dragon's Tail. Have you been up there?
Oh, yes. That's U.S. Highway 129. It's kind of an urban legend at this point. When I was a kid, the speed limit used to be 55 out there. And, I mean, these turns would be turns that if they had ratings in them, they'd be 15-mile-an-hour turns. And it's like, I want to say it's like 160 turns in 11 miles or something like that. And it's just switchback after switchback. And, you know, and it's always the place where people get bragging rights to who can get through it the fastest. And it was always a nightmare for Highway Patrol because it starts in North Carolina and ends in Tennessee. You know, and as far as, you know, someone that's really making a run at that road, there's not going to be a car that's going to keep up with it unless it's a formula car or something. And so what they've done over the years is they just keep lowering the speed limit, lowering it. And I think the last I heard, the speed limit's like 35 on that road now. But it's there's a lot of great surrounding roads, like I think it's called the Chiricahua Skyway. No, it's all, everything up there is beautiful. You know, I could give you a list of roads as long as my arm that are just, you know, fantastic. Being in North Carolina, I mean, if you're going to own a sport bike, if you can't live, you know, if you don't live in like Colorado, the next best place has got to be North Carolina.
Now, Brad, on the phone with us tonight, Coach Ricky Clark is a guy. Guys, I got to tell you, y'all know what I drive. I traded my 1994 Ford Ranger pickup truck with almost 300,000 miles for a 2000 Ford Ranger with 151,000. So I drive like Granny Crackle, whereas Brad, Ricky is a man of vehicular taste. He is a vet guy. I mean, he, you know, and Ricky will tell you, and I want to speak for you, Coach, so jump in if I'm misquoting here. Ricky likes something with a little thump. And he has been known to drive a little bit of a fast car. And you know, Coach, you drive that Corvette, and I know you love it. I know you know, and you two guys are a lot alike in this regard, in that y'all like to sound, y'all like to speed. And, old Joe Ledford, I'll handle your speeding tickets. You guys just go ahead and drive. Just give me your tickets, and we'll be just fine.
I was about to say, we got one thing in common that kind of facilitates all of that.
Well, that's true. Each of you at some point or another in the last couple of years had that conversation, had to call old Papa Bear and say, hey, I got this ticket. You know, can we deal with it? Well, Brad, let's go back to the NBA for a moment, because you did have those seats courtside. Do you agree with me, or do you agree with Ricky when it comes to, do you want to see, do you think it's reasonable as a guy who paid, and you probably paid a pretty good penny for those courtside seats? And those were the Bobcats, I believe. But, you know, am I wrong for saying that I don't think that LeBron or Michael should get that extra step, that they should be looked after by the officials, that they should get the start treatment? Do you think that I'm wrong in saying that? Because I think Ricky probably thinks I am.
Well, I mean, in a historical version of the game, I would completely agree with you. But knowing, like, just for me, like, when I said I had those seats weren't for me. Those seats for people who I was bringing to the game, people who I wanted to give the best show that I could give. And if I tell you what, if I would have been there the night that Jordan dunked from the free throw line, if someone called three steps on that, they would have burned it down, you know?
Exactly.
You know, at the end of the day, it's a show. I mean, it's – basically, you pay for, this is the way that I see it, as an outside look at it. You pay your way all the way through college, establishing that you are a person of the game. When you get to the NBA, it's a show. That's why the beers are $11 and the hot dogs $10. You're at the show. You must, you know. It's not quite like Globetrotter show. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's still the game of basketball, and they're not gonna. They only let the protagonist slide a little bit.
Would you agree with that, Ricky?
I agree. I've said it. I think that there's so much money involved. A lot of these guys, shoe contracts is just as lucrative as their player contract. And that pair of Nikes don't look good on your feet when you're sitting down. You know, they want to put the camera on those Nikes when you're at the foul line, not when you're sitting over there on the bench. And again, I just think that I think the other night, and I sat there and I watched it. Was it a foul? Absolutely, it was a foul. But the question is, was it a foul that you called? Oh, it was a foul, but that was something that you would call the first 5 minutes of the game. After you went away from that. Really, after the first 5 minutes of the game, they let them bump and grind a little bit. So for him to call that touch foul right there at the end, I think he came, the same official rotated. You know how we rotate. The same official rotated back in that position about two plays later, and he called traveling on Wade. Did he travel? Absolutely. But he's Dwayne Wade.
Stop. Please, you guys are killing me. Was it a foul? Yes. Was it traveling? Yes. But he's Dwayne Wade, but he's LeBron James.
Exactly.
You know, okay. Look, you both you guys, Brad, you've been a professional driver. Okay, you say it's at a minor league level, but that's still a professional. Ricky, you played college ball. I didn't do any of those things, okay? I'm just a sports hack, okay? I've been coaching forever. I've never been paid to coach except the first 3 years that I did it. Other than that, it's been purely volunteer. So I cannot speak as a professional at anything except my experience. And my experience is, and this is where I hear what you guys are saying, and I acknowledge that I could be as wrong as I think I am right. But I just don't think it's right for that guy who's a journeyman who is never going to meet any of his contract incentives for a competitive sporting event that we are telling people this is a legitimate, by God, sporting event. It's not like pro wrestling where we know who's going to win. We know he's going to win. You know, the thing that always wore me out about wrestling.
No one's saying that, Joe. Maybe I overstated my position. Let me say it this way. If you are a LeBron James fan, he's the hero, right?
He is.
If you're a Bobcats fan, he's the devil, right? There's got to be a conflict in every story, or it's not exciting. You got to have somebody to hate. The guys that hate LeBron James, there's as many people that come to the game to come and hate on LeBron James as there are that come to love him. I was kind of chuckling to myself, you know, not to come off as being wise or anything, but you know, if they called everything. If everything was absolute and everyone got everything called on them, what would you say when your team loses? You couldn't be like, oh, you got a bad call. You just have to be like, yeah, well, that's a better team than our team. You know? It makes it hard to be a fan of anyone other than the best guy.
Well,
well spoken. That's what I'm saying, Joe. That's all I'm saying.
It's kind of like, let's go back to pro wrestling for a minute, okay? Here's the thing about pro wrestling.
Okay.
Let's say that Brad and I are arch rivals. Here's Joe. You know, the other day Brad offended my wife and my children. He said some really mean and ugly things about Ginger and the kids. And instead of going up to him and saying, Brad, I'm going to whoop your ass right now, I'm going to say, oh, we're going to prove this on the mat in 3 weeks on pay-per-view, or we're going to wrestle to decide whether your insult means anything or not. I mean, you know, guys, now that's a show. That is an excellent show, even though I will tell you, I represented one of the Andersons, Brad Anderson, and Brad, you know, Ole and Gene Anderson were big-name wrestlers back when Jim Crockett had that, and Brad told me that his uncle, they were coming out of the armory up in Statesville, and a fan was waiting for him with a straight razor and cut his throat, and Gene about bled out because some man had, you know, I mean, and I'll tell y'all another true story about pro wrestling. There was a lady years ago named Baby Doll. Y'all might, if anybody's listening, Baby Doll was the hot chick, and she was Blackjack Mulligan's gal. Well, her real name's Nicola. I'm not going to say her last name, but Nicola got a speeding ticket up in Shelby. So I called a lawyer up there and said, hey, you know, Nicola's got a speeding ticket. I need you to get her in improper equipment. save her something on insurance. Well, he called me back and said he couldn't get it done because the judge wanted to see Baby Doll. I said, you're kidding. So I said, you know, in 2 weeks, I said, John, go back in there and get this done. He calls me back and says, you know, Joe, they're not going to do it. He wants to see Baby Doll. And they're giving him grief because he can't get Baby Doll in court. Well, Baby Doll was in California where they were doing their wrestling thing at the time. So I had a waiver, and I drove up and to Shelby myself and went in that courtroom. And I just said, John, you know, Miss whatever last name is, I ain't going to say it on the radio. She's working for Mr. Crockett, and he sent her and the whole group out to, you know, California. This is something I could actually just walk outside and pay. So I'm like, oh, okay, I guess if you're going to put it that way. So I got what I wanted. And as I was walking out of the courtroom, this is a true story. A lawyer came running up to me and said, I wouldn't have given you that deal. I said, excuse me? He said, I wouldn't have given you that deal. I said, why not? That's the way she treated Blackjack. And I said, you're not serious. Sorry. He said, I'm as serious as I know after what she said about Blackjack on TV the other night. I said, well, let me let you in on a little secret. She's actually Sam's wife, pro wrestler. And, you know, and she and Blackjack are still good friends. It's a show. You know, I mean, Mr. Crockett decided that they had used that Blackjack Baby Doll thing about as far as they could get it, so they needed some drama. But I promise you, she and Blackjack are still really good friends. And this lawyer looked at me like I was crazy. You know, I mean, don't mind me. I'm just the lawyer that represents all these people. I don't have a clue what I'm talking about. But you know, I mean, that's – I can understand that. I really can't.
I've heard people allege – that NASCAR is just as fake as wrestling. Now, I mean, I'm no NASCAR fan or expert, but I've heard many people say that NASCAR is all predetermined.
Well, Dale Earnhardt Jr. won in Daytona, right? I think the next race they ran after his father died. Isn't that right, guys? Didn't he win that race down there? And you know, is that a coincidence? I don't know, but. You know, guys, I guess, and if that's just the way it is, then shut up, Joe. That's just the way it is.
I'll go on record. I'll say that it is a show, but it's a better show than wrestling. How about that?
There you go. And I'd rather for it to be 2-2 than 3-1 any day. I would love to see 7 games. I really would.
I would too.
Well, I'm going to let you know, Joe, and you and I, Brad, we could beat Miami if they go 30 for 77.
I wouldn't know.
30 for 77?
And
oh, my
goodness. And had more to do with the outcome in that game than the 6th foul on LeBron James. Would you not agree with that, Coach? Will you not give me that point?
I'll give you that point.
Okay.
I'm going
to
give you that
point. And
what
I'd like to know, and this is where – and you guys both know I'm a First Amendment guy. I protect First Amendment rights. But with that comes a responsibility. And that responsibility is to tell the whole story. And the story is not that Indiana won and that Miami played poorly. This story is that LeBron James bit his lip to keep from getting a fine for criticizing an official about a call that was made in an NBA game. And he did a real good job of restraining himself, but I'm going to go back to something I said a little bit ago. He is the best basketball player ever, maybe. He and Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, I mean, how do you decide who's the best of those? But he's certainly one of the top five. But he's fouled out 5 times in over 800 games. Is he that good? Or is he that good? Well, let me re-ask that question. And, Ricky, I'm going to ask this to you because you know more about this than me. And, Brad, I want your answer too. Is he that good because he's that good? Or is he that good because he's that good and they let him get away with things that they don't let other players of perhaps lesser talent?
If I'm coaching.
It was Ricky first. Ricky, go ahead.
If I'm coaching LeBron James, the last person – that I'm going to have him guarding is somebody else's star player.
because that's going to take away from his energy for the offensive end of the court. And I think that was a mistake on
might be the
Heat
best point
part.
Made tonight, by the way.
Yeah, I think that was a mistake on their part. They put him on a very physical player. Put him on somebody that's going to hang around the perimeter and shoot. That does a couple of things. That keeps his legs under him on the defensive end, keeps him from burning his legs out, and it keeps him off the boards. So I'm not to take away anything from LeBron, but you know, he could do things that Jordan could not do. Jordan could not go down in the paint and guard those big guys, and LeBron can. And that's really how he got in foul trouble, because you got him guarding big power forwards and that type thing, instead of putting one of your bangers off the Birdman, for instance. Put Birdman on this kid and let LeBron keep his legs under him. So most of his career, if you go back and watch, even in Cleveland and when he played, you know, they didn't match him up with guys that was always down in the paint, always demanding the football. He's always been matched up with perimeter-type players. And, you know, not making excuses, but that may explain. It's hard for me to foul you. You shooting a three-pointer. I'm not that stupid, you know. But that may explain some of it. And then, again, you know, I'm back to, you know, you don't buy courtside seats to see LeBron James or Michael Jordan sit on the bench.
Yeah, Brad, now let me ask you the same question. Is LeBron that good, or is he better because of the advantages that he has because of a superstar status? And if so, as a fan, as the guy who had those courtside seats, does it really matter?
Well, as far as that sounds ridiculous to me, 5 out of 800. But you'd have to judge him amongst his peers. You'd have to say, how many times did Jordan foul out? How many times did Dwight Howard foul out? Any of the superstars. I would, as shocking as that number sounds to me, it would probably not be so shocking when you compared him to other superstars. Because I don't think you're seeing something that has to do with him per se. I think you're seeing something that has to do with a televised sport. But what you were saying earlier about the greatest basketball players of all time, to me, like, overall, I always say Michael Jordan. The thing that made Michael Jordan so great was, he could fly. I mean, I know a lot of it was marketing, and I'm speaking of someone who was, you know, 11 years old or so when he was at his peak. Like, I remember all this Come Fly With Me videos and stuff, and that guy could fly. I mean, in my perception, he was like a superhero. And I don't remember, I know Larry Bird was just as great of a player, but I don't ever remember seeing that media hype. I think Jordan was the first guy that became, you know, superhuman. At least in my
eye. He was bigger than the game in the NBA. I would agree with that 100%.
Yeah. And so if you ask me today who I would want to see, who I would go put my money down to go see, I'd want to see Dwight Howard. Now, do I know how well he does? I couldn't even tell you what team he plays on right now. But I know that he can do what I want to see done. I don't come to see one team win over another because I don't care about either team. I want to see that guy that can get his whole chin above the rim when he dunks. You know, I want fireworks. I don't want a game. I want fireworks, if that makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense, and as the guy who, for whatever reason, owned those seats, does that matter? It absolutely matters, because at the end of the day, it's a business. We've got just a few minutes left on this show, and, you know, we talked about motorcycles a few moments ago, and, you know, Brad, one of the things we try to do on this show when we have an opportunity is to make a serious social point. And I would like you, on a very serious level, to talk about what it takes to be safe on that motorcycle and some of the things that you think people who want to ride that bike, what can they do to make themselves safer, and talk a little bit about motorcycle safety, because as a professional driver, you just said that you stayed in races because you didn't have that accident. That course is actually set up for you to have the accident. The highway is not. Am I right?
So definitely.
Let's make a serious point about motorcycle safety before we call it a night. Would you mind doing that for me?
Sure thing. Just the quick points. If you're going to ride on the street, wear gear, wear helmet, wear gloves, wear long pants, wear a heavy jacket. Prepare for sliding down pavement. Sliding down asphalt, I can't tell you how many guys I've seen that just have had their entire body covered in scabs and skin graft just because, you know, 35 miles an hour is fast to hit the pavement naked. I mean, when we race, we wear full one-piece body suits with, you know, really thick, heavy leather and plastic sliding points. You know, as far as not crashing, don't ever, you know, riding a motorcycle is all about confidence. You can't rush it. If you're not confident in doing something, you can't do it. You can't, it's not like a car where you can slam the brakes. There's no slamming the brakes on a bike. You know, if you go into a turn, you either make the turn or you don't. You can't, there's no aborting. So it's like, you know, you can't let other people pressure you into getting outside of where you're comfortable with riding. That's the number one thing. I don't think I've ever seen anybody crash on the street that wasn't like someone else's fault. I mean, I've been T-boned before too, but, you know, as far as any time I've ever crashed or seen anyone else crash is because I was doing something that I shouldn't have been doing. I was outside of my ability. And if that's where your goal is, if you want to find those limits, you can find them all day long. And Carolina Motorsports Park is less than an hour from Pineville. And, you know, there's great guys with NESBA.com, NESBA.com, Northeast Sport Bike Association. They'll put you on a brand new bike for free. Send you out there with an instructor and say, this is how you do it.
Well, Brad, I want to thank you for calling in tonight. I want you to be feel free to call in any time to this show. And going to thank you for calling in. And we got about 2 minutes left. Ricky, as always, you get the last 2 minutes. And, Brad, we will talk with you later. Thank you for calling in.
Goodbye, Bill. Thank you. Bye.
A couple of things I wanted to mention before we got off the air tonight. I saw in the paper today where Cam Newton has lost 12 pounds. I can't begin to tell you how much quicker he's going to be from under center when he decides to tuck and run. He took off 12 pounds. It's like taking off 6 pound leg weights on each leg. He's going to be a much more mobile quarterback. Going into the start of the season, I saw a little stuff, a few things in there about the rookie camp and how those guys are coming along. So excited! Can't wait to get started for football season to get started again. The Bobcats hired a new coach. He's been associated with three different NBA teams, and everybody says that this might be the best steal that the Bobcats could have got. As far as coaches concerns, he's a hardworking guy, very personable. I just hope that franchise turns itself around. Charlotte is a great city to play professional sports in, and you know the Panthers have proven that. And so I'm hoping that Steve Clifford that he could turn that program around so we can fill up that arena. That would be great for the city and great for the Bobcats. Spurs. We keep sitting around waiting for the Spurs to get old. You remember we started talking about that at the beginning of the playoffs. It was like, you know, this team, the young team going to run the legs from under them. Young team's going to run the legs from under them. And now we're at a point where, you know, they wrapped up, they broke out the broom against the Grizzlies, swept them, and just basically sitting back waiting for the winner of the Miami Pacers series. And I kind of disagree with you, Joe, on the rest hurting them. I think with old legs, having a couple of extra days rest can't possibly slow them down. These are older players, and they probably need that rest. The younger guys, it's not so much a physical thing with them. It's a skill shooting, that type thing. And I sat there and watched the Pacers that last game. They are up in years, but some veteran players, and I think those guys are going to take advantage of that rest and come back fresh and ready to play. So I'm going to ask you, are you willing to pick a winner between the three teams right now, Heat, Pacers, and Spurs?
I think that the Heat will beat the Pacers. I think it will go to seven games. I certainly hope it does. But I think that at the end of the day, the Heat's just got too much talent. And I think LeBron is the kind of player that is determined to be a repeat champion. And I don't think this year will be the last year that we see him getting a ring. Well, Coach, we're about out of time tonight. He's Coach Ricky Clark. I'm Coach Joe Ledford. And, you know, Ricky, tonight's show sure went in a different direction. It was great having Brad call in and give us that perspective. But that guy who owned those seats, and he made me rethink some of my positions. Ladies and gentlemen, this is WDCU, Daniel Clark, Let's Talk Radio. We'll be back next Tuesday night with Barry Shuford, the head football coach from Olympic Senior High School. He's Ricky Clark. I'm Joe Ledford, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Tuesday night, 8 o'clock, on WDCU, Daniel Clark, Let's Talk Radio.